We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hey guys, I'm really pleased to have a new sponsor to the podcast. Prize Picks is the largest daily fantasy sports platform in North America. They're the easiest and the most exciting way to play DFS. It's just you against the numbers rather than you battling thousands of other players, including pros and sharks. Football season's over, but hoops action is heating up. Whether it's tournament season right through the end of this month or the fight for playoff home court advantage heading into the postseason, there's no shortage of high-stakes basketball moments this time of year. Get in on the excitement with Prize Picks, America's number one fantasy sports app, where you can turn your hoops knowledge into serious cash. Download the app today and use code Sheehan, S-H-E-E-H-A-N, for a first deposit match of up to $100.
You don't want it. You don't need it. But you're going to get it anyway. The Kevin Sheehan Show. Here's Kevin.
The show's presenting sponsor, as always, is Window Nation. Give them a call at 866-90-NATION or head to windownation.com. Mention my name for a free, no-obligation in-home estimate. You've got nothing to lose by giving them a call at 866-90-NATION or going to windownation.com. Two guests on the show today. Al Galdi is going to be on with us in the next segment, and then Chris Saliza will be on with me. No politics, all sports. Chris is writing a lot about sports these days. I'll get to the Sweet 16 games from last night. I've got a smell test pick for one of the two Elite Eight games coming up here momentarily. But I wanted to start with this. So Sam Fortier from the Washington Post tweeted out an interview from the Drake May Pro Day. He asked Drake May how it went with the Commanders after he had met with the Commanders, because he actually met with the Commanders before the Pro Day. The meeting with Jaden Daniels on Wednesday came after his Pro Day workout. But Drake May had just finished up answering a question about his meeting with the Patriots, which he said went very well, and he talked about them being a historic franchise and all of that. And then Sam Fortier asked Drake May about how it went with Washington. Here's what Drake May said. The audio's not great, but I think you'll be able to hear what he says. Here it is.
Commanders, yeah, it was good. Yeah, and there with Mr. Peters and Coach Quinn, obviously just great dudes, great people, and excited to see what's in store. I think they got a great thing going up there. So really close, pretty close to home, and being Commanders is another historic kind of ball club. They've had some good years. And
well, there haven't been many good years while you've been alive, Drake May. But good job acknowledging the past. Somebody coached him up and said, hey, you know, these guys back in the day, they were actually pretty good. Long before you were born, but they were actually pretty good. Mr. Peters, Coach Quinn, great guys, great people. Look, we didn't learn anything from that soundbite, but I played it for two primary reasons. One is, if he can play quarterback, if he's really good, he is that guy, I think, as a communicator in front of a mic. I'm not digging deep into his personality, but I've watched some interviews with him over the last couple of years. I've done the same with Jaden Daniels, J.J. McCarthy as well. I've seen enough of Caleb Williams that I didn't need to go back and look at some of those But he is a guy that I would imagine interviews pretty well. He is much more of an extrovert than Daniels, as an example. He can communicate. He exudes a lot of confidence. If he can play the position, you know, he'll be a face of the franchise type of guy. I don't think there's any doubt about it. But you do have to get the other part right, which is being really good at playing quarterback. But the other reason I played it was what I initially said in my reaction. For many, many years, the pitch to anybody new outside of this organization, especially during the Snyder era, even in the last 4 years during Rivera, and now I have a sense that it's continuing with the Josh Harris regime. And I'm not knocking it. I'm just highlighting it. And that is that a big part of the pitch has always been the history of the franchise, that the franchise is one of the marquee brands in the NFL. You know, we have three Super Bowl trophies in our lobby. You can see them. Three Lombardi trophies right here. We've got, you know, plenty of Hall of Famers. We got a Hall of Fame coach. I mean, we had Doug Williams. We had Mark Rippon. We had Joe Theismann. You ever heard of John Riggins, Darryl Green, Art Monk? Like, there's just always been, because there's nothing to pitch about the present. They have turned back the clock over and over again. And even for a guy like me, who, and you'll hear Chris Saliz and I actually talk about this a little bit, a guy like me who gets nostalgic and has talked a lot about the past, I just don't care as much about that anymore. We just have to move on from that. I'm not saying that they shouldn't use it as part of the pitch, you know, and the three Lombardi trophies shouldn't be out. Although, to be honest with you, I don't really care about seeing them anymore. I remember it. I'll be fond of it for the rest of my life. There will be stories about those teams to be told. But it's been such a wretched quarter century. It just seems like too much of the go-to move. Like Snyder's go-to move with bringing Joe, you know, into the box. Like that just got tired and old as well. Like I've said recently, I don't even need Joe Gibbs to sign off on Josh Harris or on Adam Peters or on Dan Quinn. I want, you know, the new regime to approach it in a new age way. But there's no doubt in my mind that they are presenting the franchise with the past being a big part of the pitch. Now, they're also presenting, which they should, hey, don't pay attention what's happened here recently, because it's a whole new group. You know, Josh Harris is a phenomenal guy. The ownership group has Magic Johnson in it. We've got a first-rate, you know, ownership group. And, you know, and then Adam can pitch himself, and Dan Quinn, you know, doesn't even really need to pitch himself. But they can talk about, you know, the big changes and all of the good things that are happening now. There was another soundbite that I did not play on Thursday's show because I had not seen it or heard it at that point. But I am assuming most of you have heard this at this point. But did you hear LSU coach Brian Kelly's slip-up at the end of talking about Jaden Daniels, specifically about his thin frame and whether or not it can hold up? Here's what it sounded like on Jaden Daniels' pro day on Wednesday.
He is going to be so committed to taking care of himself that you don't have to worry about size or he doesn't weigh enough. Lamar's done a pretty good job with his size. I think Mahomes, I wouldn't consider him a giant because he's going to get the ball out to the playmakers and make plays for Washington.
For Washington, Brian Kelly just slipped. Did he slip because he knows something? Or did he mention that because he's hoping it into existence because, I don't know, maybe it's better that his college quarterback that he just coached for 2 years goes number two overall rather than later than number two. I have no idea if he knows something at this point. I did something on radio yesterday following the four pro days now of the top four, perceived top four guys. Jaden Daniels, Caleb Williams, Drake May, J.J. McCarthy. Just asking people, and we put a Twitter poll out there as well, if people have now a gut feeling or a hunch as to what Washington is thinking. We had 48% plus say they have a hunch that Washington's going to take Jaden Daniels. It may be off of the Brian Kelly comment. 38% said, May, and only 5% said McCarthy. 8% said trade back. I don't know anything. This organization's buttoned up. I've listened to everything just like you guys have. I've read everything. I don't think there are any tells at this point. The only tell, honestly, is just the insistence on mobility being a big deal. The comment that Dan Quinn made when he was on with the Junkies a month ago now, when they, played word association with names, and with Drake May, he said athletic. With Jaden Daniels, he said game changer. I still don't have any clue. I don't have any clue on the direction they are going to go. And I still, even after the pro days, would suggest that they're not in consensus at this point. You still have top 30 visits, and those are more intense than anything that happens at the combine or anything that happens at the pro day. I think the pro days really were just to see what these guys look like close up, to see how they interact with people around them. But on a top 30 visit day, you're going to get him in the classroom. You know, Cliff Kingsbury is going to be able to grill J.J. McCarthy and all of these guys, Jaden Daniels, Drake May, on, what do you do if you see this kind of coverage and we've got this called? That's going to be a big learning experience for all of them as well. All of the tape, a lot of the due diligence stuff, that's complete now. But this top 30 visit day, I don't know if it'll be a mind changer if they've made up their mind, but I think it could be impactful. And at this point, I have no idea which way they're leaning. I did want to mention, though, I have mentioned this before, but there was a story after the pro day on Thursday, not for Drake May, but for Michael Penix Jr., that he had a really good pro day, and he ran the 40 in sub 4.6. Now, he's not been a big-time running quarterback, although he was more so at Indiana before the injuries. But he ran the 40 just so people knew that he's an athlete. I like Michael Penix Jr. a lot. I think Michael Penix Jr. processes pre-snap, post-snap better than any of these quarterbacks. I'm just talking about at a college level. I mean, he got sacked 11 times in 15 games last year. And if you watched Washington, you know why. Because he sees everything, and he anticipates everything so well. And he throws a great ball. He throws a great deep ball. I think Jaden Daniels throws the best deep ball, but Penix Jr. probably throws the second best deep ball. I think he's going in the first round. I would be, at this point, stunned if Michael Penix Jr. isn't picked in the first round, and I guess people are settling in on the top four, but we got a month to go and things could change. I think Penix Jr. maybe turned some heads at his pro day by running the 40 and running it in sub 4.6. He says, by the way, he thinks he can run 4.4 and that it wasn't even a good time for him. We're talking about something that doesn't really matter that much, but because of his injuries at Indiana, and because of the lack of scrambling a lot as a college quarterback, I think people wanted to know what he would run, and he did it for them. I like Penix Jr. I like Penix Jr. a lot. All right, before we get to Galdi, I'll get to a smell test pick here momentarily for the one Elite Eight game tonight. But, man, the Sweet 16 games last night, Purdue, super impressive. I think they're going to have a much tougher time against Tennessee tomorrow. NC State continued this incredible run that they've been on. I mean, think back to that Virginia game. They're down three, and O'Connell banks in a three-pointer at the buzzer when Virginia fails to use one of the three fouls they had to give to foul and force him to inbound again. I mean, they're done at that point. Kevin Keats is probably fired at that point. Winning the ACC tournament gave him, I didn't even realize this, gave him an automatic two-year extension. Good for him. But NC State continuing this magical run. I mean, Marquette really never had a chance missed a ton of free throws. They were 4-for-31 from behind the arc. And DJ Horn was outstanding, their point guard last night, NC State's point guard. And they won a game without DJ Burns being a major factor as a scorer. But NC State's moved on. And then Tennessee beat Creighton last night. Dalton Knecht, if you haven't watched him, he's a big-time pro for Tennessee. They're well-coached with Rick Barnes. But then the game of the night was Duke-Houston. I gave Duke out as a smell test pick, and it came through. But it may not have come through had Shed, their outstanding, Houston's outstanding point guard, not gotten hurt. Jamal Shed rolled an ankle with about 13 minutes to go. 13 minutes, excuse me, into the first half, which was a brutally physical and intense defensive first half. When he left the game with his rolled ankle, the score was 16-10 with like 6:50 to go in the first half. Houston had a 6-point lead. He was everything for Houston, the heart and soul of that team, one of the best players in the country. And losing him, and apparently even if they had survived last night, he was not going to be available for the rest of the tournament. He didn't break the ankle, but those of you that have had high ankle sprains, you know a high ankle sprain is actually worse than a break in terms of how long sometimes it takes to get back to normal off of it. But man, I have to give Duke some credit. Houston is an incredible defensive team, especially on the perimeter. And Duke was struggling early. They got hit in the mouth early. This was before Shed left the game. It was 8-0. And I thought they gave it back at Houston all night long, defensively, on their own, on the glass. They out-rebounded Houston last night. They had 13 offensive rebounds in the game. And then the guy that really came up big for them was Jeremy Roach. You know, a DMVer, a WCACer. Jeremy Roach, he seems like he's been there forever now. All 14 of his points and big ones in the second half. And Duke beats Houston 54-51. Would Houston have won the game with Shed? Probably. Would they have covered? Maybe. But I'll tell you what, Duke was ready for the rumble last night. I give them and Shire a lot of credit. They knew what was coming. Houston is just an overwhelmingly physical and defensive first team, and they don't let you make forward progress in your half court. That's how good they are on the perimeter. And Duke gave it right back to them. They really did. Houston missed a bunch of free throws in the game. That's been a theme here recently, the missed free throws in the Sweet 16. I mentioned Marquette last night. Same with Houston. And then on Thursday night, you had Iowa State Illinois, horrendous from the free throw line. And they survived. 14 missed free throws in that game. I think the Sweet 16 games have been great. I thought that Houston-Duke game was, for an ugly offensive game, it was very entertaining defensively. It's a shame for Kelvin Sampson and Houston because they've been such a good team. And they, I think, would have been the best test for UConn. Although I think some of the other Big East teams, both of them gone now in Marquette and Creighton, because they're used to playing UConn, perhaps would have been a good match for them as well. But I don't know, man. UConn looks like an absolute freight train. I don't know who beats them. All right, one smell test pick for the Elite Eight games tonight. I'll tweet this out, and then I'll tweet out a pick or picks for tomorrow's two Elite Eight games on Twitter tomorrow. But I like Clemson tonight, +3.5 against Alabama. Bama in that game against Carolina, that may have been the most entertaining game of the tournament. The up-and-down nature, the runs in that game, outstanding. Clemson's so well coached. Brad Brownell's doing a phenomenal job. He's always done a great job. They've just always had a key mistake or a key injury along the way. This is his first Elite Eight appearance. It was only his second Sweet 16 appearance for the longest tenured Clemson basketball coach ever, which was surprising to me, but he has been there for a long time. But Clemson plus the 3.5 in the second of the two Elite Eight games tonight against Bama. The public's on Bama. There's some sharp money on Clemson. I'll take Clemson to cover and perhaps get to their first ever Final Four. We will see some ACC presence for sure because Duke's playing NC State in an Elite Eight game. But Clemson is the pick plus the 3.5. 12-10 overall so far in the tournament. All right, Al Galdi next, right after these words from a few of our sponsors. Hey guys, most of us are interested in our mental and physical well-being to a certain degree, and with that in mind, I'd like to welcome and introduce a new sponsor to the podcast. The new sponsor is Unified Healing, Unified spelled U-N-I-F-Y-D, Healing. It doesn't matter if you're a big-time world-class athlete or just a somewhat athletic podcaster like me. We all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring the podcast now. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Whether you're here in the DMV or anywhere else across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Well, go to unifiedhealing.com/Sheehan to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, spelled U-N-I-F-Y-D, healing.com/Sheehan. No material or testimonies on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare providers with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
If you're a basketball junkie, then you know there's no better time of year than the NBA playoffs. Twice a week, JJ Redick is cooking on his podcast, The Old Man and the Three. He has guys come on in all stages of their careers to talk about the league and share stories you won't hear anywhere else, including Devin Booker on why he talks so much trash, Ray Allen's epic free throw competitions with LeBron in Miami, and the moment Tyrese Halliburton knew Pascal Siakam would be a good fit in Indy. In addition to player interviews, every Monday, JJ breaks down the top three things happening around the NBA with unmatched analysis, not outlandish takes, and is often joined by masterminds of the game like Tim Legler to dive deep on rookie reports, trade breakdowns, and why is mean mugging now a tech? you won't find another outlet that covers the game as comprehensively and with such insight as JJ does it on The Old Man and the Three. Make this your companion podcast during the playoffs. Listen to The Old Man and the Three ad-free on Wondery Plus or wherever you get your podcasts.
This segment of the show brought to you by MyBookie. Go to MyBookie.ag. Use my promo code KevinDC. That's KevinDC, and you'll get a cash bonus on your initial deposit. MyBookie's got everything you need for the tournament. The Elite Eight games today, tomorrow, the Final Four games coming up. That'll send us right into the NHL playoffs and then the NBA playoffs after that. But they've got everything you need for all of these games, the women's games as well. There are over 150 prop bets for these games that are up right now. I'm looking at UConn -8.5. Actually, with 148 prop bets. Sorry, I was two off. 148 prop bets for the UConn-Illinois game, which is the first to go tonight at 6:09 p.m. Eastern. But my bookie is just one of those spots you can count on. Fair numbers, fair pricing, and everything you're looking for in a sports book. If you have a place where you're wagering already, it doesn't matter. Use MyBookie for the free cash that they'll give you upon signing up, and is a place where you can comparison shop on spreads, money lines, totals, pricing. That's a big deal, pricing. A lot of the places right now are charging too much when you lose just a straight bet. You shouldn't be paying any more than -108, -109, -110 on a straight bet loss. MyBookie.ag, promo code KevinDC. All right, jumping on with me right now is my good friend Al Galdi from the Al Galdi Podcast. You can follow Al on X on Twitter, at Al Galdi. You can get his podcast wherever you get a podcast. So let's get to it. The number one story in town, and it will be for the next month. What will they do at number two? Let's fast forward to the night of April 25th and assume that Caleb Williams has gone number one to Chicago. Washington's on the clock. Who will they take? Who should they take?
I think they take Drake May. I think they should take Drake May. But as I keep saying on my show, I reserve the right to change my stance because I think this is tough. I think this is tricky. I think there's a lot to like with May, with Jaden Daniels, and with J.J. McCarthy. Look, we have no idea how this quarterback class is going to turn out, but this does appear to be a good one. And I think there's just so much to like with each guy. I'm leaning toward May because I have real concerns about Daniels. I think there are some things that jump out that make you wonder if he might be a bust. And, I'm starting to look at it from that perspective of we know they're not all going to hit, right? We know how it goes with these first-round quarterbacks. It's like a 30-40% hit rate. So it's almost like who has the most bust potential? Like if we concede that at least a few are not going to work out, who are most likely to not work out? And I think there are things about Daniels that stand out in that regard. Principal among them, the stature, he's thin, he runs with a reckless style, at least some of the time, and I think he's an injury waiting to happen. I worry about him in that way. But look, May is not a perfect prospect. There's an inconsistency with him that a lot of people point out, and McCarthy is so raw that I think there's real upside there, but I think you kind of want to see more before you really buy into it. So I would lean May, but I don't yell at anyone who says any of the other two because I think this is a tricky one.
So why do you think they'll go May?
Because I think as things stand now, he feels like the safest of the three. But, I say that even acknowledging like there's risk with him. And the other thing is, we're hearing, oh, they like Daniels. Oh, they like McCarthy. And I think this time of year, when you hear things like that, it's almost like safe to assume the exact opposite of what you're hearing. So it feels like, especially when we get these reports of Daniels and McCarthy and not so much May, that makes me think that May might in fact be the lean.
So if we consider history to be a predictor of the future, then we all know as football fans that there's risk, as you discussed. And let's just say two out of the four quarterbacks that get selected are going to turn out to be bad picks in hindsight, in retrospect. Are you one of those that Would like to eliminate that possibility of failing big time on the quarterback and instead build out the roster, trade back, accumulate picks, and address quarterback at a later time. Do you buy into that being a viable path?
I really don't. The only way that I'm really open to trading down is if Adam Peters and company don't like any of these quarterbacks and have major concerns about all of them. But I think the guiding light, the North Star, is quarterback. And I'm not a big believer in build up the rest of the team and then drop in the quarterback unless, like I said, you really don't have a quarterback who you like. I think this is a draft that it's hard to not like at least one of these people. I mean, I think there's enough to like with each guy to where I'd be really surprised if Adam Peters and his people just aren't in on any of these guys. You're never going to have another opportunity like this, or at least you can't assume that you're going to have another opportunity like this. The number two overall pick in an NFL draft that is perceived to be quarterback rich. And, you know, not that what happened 4 years ago should dictate what happens now, but if there's one thing from the Ron Rivera era that we could undo, it would be what was done with that number two overall pick in the 2020 draft. Like, I think it's obvious there. Like, you wouldn't take Chase Young, you'd take Justin Herbert, and who knows how different the last 4 years would be. Are we really going to make that same mistake again, not take a quarterback with a number two overall pick in a draft like this? So, you know, again, unless they just really don't like any of these guys, I think you stay at two, or maybe, you know, you make a minimal trade down with the idea that you know that you can get the guy who you do like, but quarterback leads the way. And then I think you worry about everything else after that, because I think we all know if you hit on the quarterback, everything else looks better. There is a rising tide nature to having a great quarterback. And if they hit on this, that changes everything with this team. You really can't overstate the importance of what is done with this pick.
Yeah. All right. So how did you describe on your show, or how have you been describing on your show, how they've handled free agency?
I think they've done a good job. I think it's been a smart approach from a standpoint of diversifying the risk. You know, free agency in a lot of ways is a sucker's game, because, you know, many times if you're a great player, you don't make it to free agency. So it's almost like there's a flaw with everyone in free agency, and it's just a matter of detecting the flaws and identifying the people who will work out for you and for whom the flaws can be minimized. So I think when you spread out the money like they have, I think that's a good way to go, because you don't have to hit on any singular guy to make it a successful free agent class. You know, if you hit on, you know, half of these guys or two-thirds of these guys, it's a really good class. A lot of money has not been spent on any one player, and they're still positioned to have a lot of cap space for next offseason, which I think is smart, because, as we all know, you can carry over cap space. And I think a year from now, the team will have a much better sense of where it's at in the rebuild, in the recalibration, you know, where we are at quarterback. Is the defense, in fact, better than we anticipated? So you can really go even harder on free agency next offseason with a better understanding of what you have. But, you know, I think it's also interesting in this way. The team is, or at least in free agency, and I think this is a smart way to do it, you have in the NFL premium positions and non-premium positions. And I think an intelligent way to do player personnel is you address the premium positions in the draft and you address the non-premium positions in free agency. And if you look at the positions that have been addressed in free agency in terms of, like, likely starters who have been acquired, interior offensive line, linebacker, safety, these are what are known as non-premium positions in football. Not that they don't matter, but they don't matter as much as quarterback, offensive tackle, receiver, corner. Now, the team did sign three edge defenders, and that's a premium spot. So this isn't like a perfect summation of what's been done. But I think by and large, because non-premium positions, you can tend to get better value and better players in free agency, I think that's a good route to go. And then you use the NFL draft to get the guys at those other spots where, again, usually the really good guys at those spots don't make it to free agency.
That does not bode well for you-know-who in Atlanta. I give you all the credit in the world for coming up. You said it on my show like a year and a half ago or something, and I love that description of Kirk Cousins, you-know-who. Because you know who got the bag again.
And
you know, it's funny because as you were talking, I'm like, Yeah, I think a lot of that is true, except for, you know, Denver with Peyton Manning, Tampa with Tom Brady. You know, there are certain examples where teams have literally been just that quarterback away and have nailed it in free agency and gotten to a Super Bowl and won a Super Bowl. But no, I think for the most part that's true. How do you think you know who will do in Atlanta? Have we talked about this? I'm sure we have.
You know what, off the air, I think we have, yeah. I will always have a special place in my heart for You Know Who, in part because it drives so many people crazy. And there is a triggering nature to You Know Who that, to me, will never not be hysterical. How if you say his name, which is why we don't say his name, it sends people off in all kinds of directions.
It's crazy.
But the fact that here we are, you know, it's been now, I mean, you think about this, right? It's been 12 years since that 2012 draft. I mean, a decade plus. And it's been almost 10 years now since You Know Who got the starting quarterback job here. Like, a lot of time has passed since all of that drama. And yet here we are years later, and this guy is still cashing in like crazy. He's coming off a ruptured Achilles. He's in his mid-30s, and he still gets a contract like that. If there is a business/contract /financial sports Hall of Fame, this guy is like a first ballot inductee without question. It really is something.
All right, let's switch subjects quickly before we lose half of the audience. What did you make of Ted's journey to Virginia and back?
Yeah, that really was amazing. I mean, you start with the poetry/irony/whatever you want to call it. We went through this with the Redskins years ago, and now like almost a carbon copy of it happens, you know, in 2023, 2024. So I think you start with that. You know, obviously this was not managed and finagled well. Clearly there was a disconnect between Glenn Youngkin and the Virginia Senate. I don't know how much of that was politics versus how much of that was just, you know, a bad job that was done by Youngkin and, you know, getting the Senate on board. But, you know, this was a situation where I think D.C. fumbled, okay? D.C. was asleep at the wheel on this and didn't take the threat of Ted to leave D.C. seriously enough. But clearly, Ted did not have his ducks in a row, didn't have, you know, the I's dotted and the T's crossed to where this thing was even close to a done deal. And it's embarrassing how it fell apart. Now, you know, I think there's a perspective of, well, it's embarrassing, yes, the deal didn't happen, yes, and yet still he got $515 million from D.C. So at the end of the day, like, was Ted really embarrassed by all this? Like, at the end of the day, he got more money out of the city. So I guess, you know, you could say, well, Ted saved face to that degree. But, you know, when you look at what was announced in December, all the pomp and circumstance of that press conference to where we are now, it is something. I mean, this thing really fell apart and quickly. And that doesn't make anyone look good.
Yeah, I got this tweet, and I just found it because I wanted to read it with you on the air. It came from Scott. He writes, "Why do you guys in the media seem to hate Ted Leonsis so much? Why does it seem to Scott and others, I think, that people in the media dislike Ted?"
Well, I mean, I think some people do. I think there's a lot of mocking of Ted that goes on. And I think what we've seen over the last year since Dan sold the football team is that the spotlight is shining on Ted and the Learners like never before. I mean, I don't think it's at all coincidence that Ted and the Learners have taken as much criticism as I think they've ever taken during their time as owners in D.C. over the last year, because that spotlight has shifted. But, you know, I think with Ted, like, it's a little complicated, okay? So he owns the Wizards and the Caps. I think when it comes to owning the Caps, there are nits to pick, but, you know, the overall body of work is pretty good. The ownership of the Wizards has been abysmal. And so I think you have to sort of assess it in that way. Like, it's not about whether you like them personally or not. It's just you look at his two teams, and one team has been a complete failure, the Wizards. You know, no appearance past the second round of the playoffs since 1979, and a good chunk of that now has come with Ted as the owner. So, you know, it's not a personal thing like if it came with Dan because of all of the off-the-field screw-ups, but I just think if you're looking at this in a sober way, you know, from a purely sports perspective, I don't know how you could be doing cartwheels over Ted as an owner when he, you know, his NBA team is one of the worst-run franchises in not just the NBA, but in sports over the last 40 years. And that's not all on Ted, but a lot of that now has come with Ted. He's owned the team for well over a decade now.
Yeah, first of all, I would never categorize it as hate. I don't put it in those terms. I'm sure I felt that way about Dan to a certain degree because he ruined something so sacred to so many of us. The two franchises that Ted owns, I'm not saying it's not sacred to many people. I've been a massive Bullets Wizards fan my whole life, but it's just it's a lot less that are impacted by his ownership. I think you're right. I think Caps fans have a different perspective than Wizards fans. I think it's the personality, though. I think it's this, I'm the smartest guy in the room, just ask me, attitude that I think people in the media have had maybe more access to or have been closer to and maybe have just paid attention to it more over the years. But you're 100% right. With Dan being gone, the focus is now on the other owners like it's never been before. And they all benefited from Dan being here because none of the ownership for any of the teams has been outstanding. But I think it's personality. You know, I just think there's a guy in Ted where a lot of people who pay more attention to it, and those are media people who may have more access to it, have seen, you know, over and over again, especially in his public-facing events, how willing he is to tell you how smart he is, you know, and how savvy he is, and how edgy he is, and how ahead of the trends he tends to be, and what a big gold star brand builder he is. And I think that kind of thing sometimes just gets a little bit too much for people. In fairness, though, I think he's built a great consumer experience. He comes out of that environment with AOL. He's done a lot of things well. But anyway, let's move on. Tell me about the Nats. What kind of season are they going to have?
Well, I think this is a really big year in the rebuild. I think to this point, hard to say whether the rebuild is working. There are reasons to say yes. There are reasons to say not so fast on that. I think by the end of this season, we're going to have real clarity on if this thing is working or not, because it is this season that we're anticipating the major league debuts of these great prospects, guys like Dylan Cruz and James Wood and Brady House. We're now multiple seasons into guys like C.J. Abrams and Josiah Gray and Mackenzie Gore and Keibert Ruiz being at the major league level. And so I think we're going to have a real sense on where this thing is at. One of the, I think, encouraging things, but also in some ways maybe frightening things, is that when a rebuild works in baseball now, you know it. Like, it is announced in a very clear and declarative way. And what you'll see is the team will go from really bad to actually pretty good a season or two sooner than you think. The Orioles 2 years ago are a perfect example of this. Not last year, but in 2022. The Cubs in 2015 are an example of this, making the NLCS a year or two, maybe even more, before people thought would happen. So when the rebuild works, it kind of all comes together in this great way sooner than you think. And so what I'm hoping with the Nats, and you know, who knows how likely this is, but what I'm hoping is that we get something like that this year, not necessarily a playoff-making season, but maybe a winning season, you know, maybe like an 82-80 type season where you're in wild card contention well into the season. That's the kind of year that would, I think, proclaim, hey, this thing is working. Because it's funny with the Nats, there still are real big picture questions to me. I still think there's an ownership question. I know that the Lerners are no longer exploring selling the team, but, you know, I still think if the right offer came along, the team would be sold. And, you know, I think it's really tricky why the team was taken off the market. I just don't think they got the offer they wanted. I've also been told that all of the Lerners were not on the same page with selling the team. So I think there are questions there. And there are questions with the front office. The Nats in September, October, November revamped the front office while at the same time extending Mike Rizzo, which is such a weird thing to do, A, where you keep the head of the front office, but you revamp everything beneath them, and B, that you do that in the middle of a rebuild that you keep telling people is working. So if the rebuild is working, why did you essentially blow up your baseball ops beneath the guy in charge of your baseball ops? And if you thought so little of the baseball ops, then why did you keep the guy in charge of the baseball ops? So that to me is strange. So I still have big picture questions, but there is talent with this team. There is promising young talent, and if the talent hits, this can be a successful rebuild. So I think this season's a big one.
Which of the young prospects, you know, Wood, Cruz, et cetera, are you most excited to see?
Right now, I actually would say Wood, because he had such a good spring training season. And, you know, Wood is a really big kid. He's like 6'7". So there is this, like, you know, Aaron Judge quality to him, this, like, Ruthian quality to him, to where he looks the part. Now, the more regarded prospect is Cruz, although not by much. Like, each guy is like a top 15 prospect in the sport. But I think right now there actually might be more excitement for Wood. And, you know, it is telling. Wood has started the season at AAA. Cruz has started the season at AA. So at least as things stand right now, we probably will see Wood before we see Cruz. But make no mistake, I mean, each guy is one of the top prospects in the sport. And each guy has superstar potential. And that's what's so exciting here. Like, you could have another Soto, another Harper in the mix with these guys, which would be huge for this team.
Galdi also does a Nats podcast with Mark Zuckerman from Masson. It's called Nats Chat, and you can get that wherever you get podcasts. Great catching up. Thanks for doing this.
Yep, thank you very much.
Up next, Chris Sollizzo will jump on with me. We will talk sports, not politics. We'll find out what Chris has been up to. It's been a while. I spent a lot of time with Chris on Tony's radio show for many years. That's next, right after these words from a few of our sponsors. Two rounds are in the books, guys. Round of 16 coming up on Thursday, Friday, then the round of 8. And by the time we get to late Sunday night, we will be down to the last four teams standing in the tournament. If you're looking to combine daily fantasy sports and the tournament, I've got the app for you. Prize Picks. Download the Prize Picks app like I have. It's an easy and exciting way to play DFS. Prize Picks is the largest daily fantasy sports platform in North America, and it's different. It's just you against numbers, not you battling thousands of other players. You either pick more than or less than on between two players and six players and their stat projections with odds. Right now, you can win up to 100 times your money on Prize Picks with as little as four correct picks. You can turn $10 into $1,000 with NBA, NHL, and yes, college basketball tournament action on Prize Picks today. It's America's number one fantasy sports app. Prize Picks, by the way, even offers injury insurance so that your entries stay in play even if one of your players gets injured. Download the app today and use my code SHEEN for a first deposit match of up to $100. That's the Prize Picks app. Download it today. Use my code SHEEN, SHEEHAN, for a first deposit match of up to $100. Prize Picks. Pick more, pick less. It's that easy.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Did you know that most vitamin D3 supplements come from sheep's wool? I'm Kat, founder of Ritual. We're making traceability the new standard for the supplement industry. When I was pregnant, I couldn't find a multivitamin I could trust, so I created my own. Ours is made traceable, third-party tested, and clean label project certified. Oh, and our vitamin D3? It comes from sustainably harvested lichen from England, not sheep. Trace for yourself with 25% off at ritual.com/podcast.
This segment of the show is brought to you by Window Nation. Just give Window Nation a shot if you've been thinking about new windows. There's no cost, no risk to just getting an estimate at Window Nation. Free, no obligation quotes from Window Nation if you mention my name at 866-90-NATION or go to windownation.com. March is a time where the weather is changing. April is as well. It's a critical time to check the status of your home's windows. If they're cracked, if they're leaking, if they won't stay open, or if they won't close and lock properly. You need new windows. And right now, Window Nation is offering buy two, get two free with no limits. So if you need six windows, you'll pay for three of them. If you need 12, you'll only pay for six of them. And right now, no money down, no payments, and no interest for 2 years. So when you start paying for these windows, it'll be 2026, and you will have already realized the benefit of lower energy bills and a better-looking home. Call them at 866-90-NATION or head to windownation.com. All right, jumping on with us right now is a friend who I haven't seen or talked to in a long time until very recently, but Chris Cillizza, of course, was with CNN forever and was a big part, and probably still is, although I don't listen as much as I used to, the Tony Kornheiser podcast, the Tony Kornheiser show. Chris and I spent many a day in Tony's studio together over many years, and Chris is now doing a bunch of stuff on his own. He's writing for Substack, he's writing politics, but he's also writing about sports. You can follow Chris on Twitter, on X, at Chris Cillizza, that's C-I-L-L-I-Z-Z-A. How have you been? It's been a while.
I always say that I feel like my friendships improve the less people see me. You know, like I feel like that. I feel like I have kind of an expiration date. You know, it's like you can only take so much of me, but if you haven't seen me in a while, you're like, hey, that guy, he's not a bad guy. Yeah. So I feel like fondness has made our hearts grow fonder. Distance has made our hearts grow fonder.
Yeah. Well,
and I'm well. Thank you for asking.
I'm enjoying your company already because it's been so long. So it's great.
Exactly.
So tell everybody what you're up to.
Yeah. So obviously I mostly have written in my life about politics. And right. I continue to do that. I have a newsletter every day. If you want to subscribe to it, I'd love to have you. But I am also, as you mentioned, working with Tony and you, and, you know, I've always been sort of a sports guy. Growing up, I always thought I was going to be a sports reporter, and then I wound up being a political reporter. So it's kind of divergent, but I'm trying to get back to that. So I'm writing every day. Content is free, so just subscribe. It's free. You can, like you said, go to my Twitter feed. You can see it right there. It's called The Replay. The idea of it is, it came from this. I think you'll appreciate this, Kevin. So I have two boys who are 15 and 11.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. I
kind of remember when they were born at this point.
Yes, yeah. I know. We've known each other too long. A ninth grader and a sixth grader. They're both really into sports. They like playing them. They like following them, etc. So I, like, probably six-ish months ago, they were arguing about who the best athlete in the world was. So it was like all the names you would think of. Mahomes, Shohei Ohtani, right? Like, you know, the debate that kids, that we had when we were kids. And I said to them, you know, I made me feel 200 years old, but I said to them, you guys ever heard of Bo Jackson? And they were like, no, who's that? You know, and again, like, in a way, it made me feel really old because, you know, I'm 48. Bo Jackson was like one of the central figures of my childhood. So I pulled up, thank God for YouTube, I pulled up YouTube, and I showed them for people who follow this stuff closely, you'll know this, the footage of when Bo is on the Royals and he catches a fly ball in left center
and runs up the wall. Yeah.
Right. And then I showed him like just a little bit of like a compilation of like best Bo Jackson clips when he's like at Auburn, you know, in his prime, running through tackles and stuff. I showed them the Bo Nose commercials, you know, and we probably spent, and this is amazing for my kids because they have no attention span, we probably spent 20 minutes like going through YouTube clips of Bo Jackson. And it occurred to me, like, you know, there's value in looking back to look forward, right? And so The Replay really tries to say, we're going to look at what's happening in everyday sports life through the lens of history, through the lens of what's happened before. So, like, I did on last Thursday, I did a best buzzer beaters in the history of March Madness. And I did, you know, some of them I had, like, off the top of my head. I remember watching Leitner in 1992 beat Kentucky and Jamal Mashburn. I remember watching Lorenzo Charles drop that ball in NC State to beat Bislamajama in Houston. some of them, like 1977 Marquette, I didn't. You know, I was like doing my research, so I'm learning stuff too. But that's the goal. The goal is to kind of like, there's so much coverage of sports. It's like, who are the Commanders going to draft at number two? Who, you know, what I would do with that is say, well, let's look at the history of, you know, the number one or number two QB picks. Like, how many times has it worked out? How many times has it not worked out? Is there a common thread there, right? Like, so be in the news, but not just this is exactly what's happening. Like, is it Jaden Daniels? Is it Drake May? Is it maybe Caleb Williams? Like, try to find an angle that is historical and kind of informs you looking back to look forward. Does that make sense?
Yeah, of course it does, especially for somebody like me. And I get accused of being overly nostalgic at times. I get accused of going down memory lane too much. You know, it's funny because there are listeners that are like, okay, but... you know, we do have a draft coming up. And look, this time of year, I'm focused on what the important stories are. But I think the majority of listeners to this podcast love when Tommy and I on the podcast talk about, you know, what you just said, you know, going through the greatest buzzer beaters or talking about the greatest athletes. Look, I think one of the real interesting conversations, Tommy and I have it occasionally, although not as much anymore because he's unmovable on this. And that is because I have three boys, and two of my three boys are just massive sports fans. And they laugh when I say, oh, no. Dominique Wilkins, Karl Malone, these are two athletic types, Jordan, of course, that would translate to today's game. And so, you know, we're always on a text thread. I would bet that I've sent them more Dominique Wilkins highlight reels that get, you know, tweeted out. Because I actually think there are certain athletes from back then that would, if you dropped them into today's game, they would completely assimilate. It would be, you know, they would look like today's players and they'd be great. But I also think, and I'm curious as to what you think, I think, like, basketball in particular has evolved to the point where the game today at the NBA level, it's so much higher quality in terms of athleticism and skill than it was even 20 years ago.
Like, absolutely. I mean, I absolutely agree. I mean, I grew up in Connecticut, and while the Celtics played, talk about a thing that feels like 200 years ago, the Celtics used to play, for people who don't know, they probably played 20 games a year at the Hartford Civic Center.
Yeah, I remember.
They would come and play home games there, right? So a lot of people I knew rooted for the Celtics. I rooted for the 76ers. This was the 76ers of Bobby Jones and Andrew Toney and obviously Dr. J.
Moses Malone.
Maurice Cheeks, Moses Malone. And, like, they were a great team in the mid-1980s. But the way the game has changed, those guys, like, Moses Malone was sort of like an undersized big, you know. I mean, he was a great player. I loved him. I don't know that how much success Moses Malone would have in the modern game. To your first point, and to your second point, there are just more good people in the NBA than we've ever had before. I mean, I don't think, like, any team. I have NBA League Pass, so I watch a fair number of kind of random games. Every team has two or three incredibly good basketball players. You know, and I wrote about this last week on the replay on the sports newsletter I do. One of the things, and I wonder what you think of this, I remember in the 80s and 90s, Monday night was appointment viewing for me. Big Monday, right? Dick Vitale, Digger Phelps, you know, a Big East game and then a Big Ten game usually. College basketball was so relevant. And this year and the last couple years, man, I have struggled. Even during the tournament, I mean, I watch the games, but even during the tournament, I'm like, like, I don't, even Duke, like, I used to hate Duke. Leitner and Bobby Hurley, you know, Cherokee Parks. You live at Duke now, I'm like, I don't really know any of these guys. Like, if you can't hate people you don't know. You know, and I just think whether it's the transfer portal, whether it's conference realignment because of football, like, to me, pro basketball is far better than it's ever been in talent. college basketball to me is less appealing and entertaining than it's ever been, which is a huge statement for someone like me. I grew up in Connecticut, right? We didn't have any pro teams. We had UConn men's basketball and UConn women's basketball. That's it. And I just find myself really struggling to watch. Now, I will say as a caveat, I'm a Georgetown basketball fan. Obviously, we are horrendous. We've won 4 Big East games in the last 3 years. So that also hurts. But I think just I'm a fan of college basketball, and I'm just not like there's not. Is there anyone who's like must see TV other than Caitlin Clark on the women's side? It doesn't really feel like there is.
I mean, there are people listening to this right now that are saying to themselves, "Sheehan, he's doing your show from the last 3 weeks when you were talking about college basketball, and I did not know how Chris felt about anything. The only difference is he's a Georgetown guy, I'm a Maryland guy, but the feeling is the same, and I've said I'm not into it. College basketball is so much less relevant than it's ever been, and I caveat it with I understand how I feel because when Maryland's not in the tournament, it is a slightly different feeling for me. And this was as bad of a season that Maryland basketball's had in 30 some years. I mean, they ended up with a losing record, which hasn't happened for 30 something years except for the interim year with Danny Manning. But I'm totally with you. Now let me just say, when the tournament started last week, I've watched a lot of it. I have certainly bet a lot of it, and I'm into it, and I was into it last night watching. I thought Carolina-Alabama was as close to an NBA style of game, but there's no doubt. See, it's become a one-month – first of all, for 15 years, going back 15 years, it had become a one-month of the year calendar sport. You're right. Big Monday used to be a big deal. I used to remember big heavyweight non-conference matchups in November and December that I would, you know, get into. But I think there are many reasons. I think number one is the NFL has basically covered up everything in its offseason. It has made everything less relevant than it used to be because the NFL has figured out a way to capture our attention pretty much 12 months out of the year. Here's something to think about, by the way. They're gonna run a triple header, the NFL is, on December 21st up against the first round of these college football playoff games. I can't believe they're going to do that.
I saw that. Remarkable. Well, if some is good, more is better, right?
Yeah, right.
I feel like that's the NFL theory of the case.
And then transfer portal, NIL, conference realignment, you've mentioned it all. And certainly, the quality of play, although actually now with players staying in the game a little bit longer with NIL, we should see an increase in quality. But my God, back to the NBA. It's the level of skill and talent. You know, people like Tommy don't love the game. He's like, oh, the 67 76ers with Wilt, you know, would kill these teams. No, they wouldn't. They would lose in four straight by an average of 35 points a game, right?
The shooting is just I do this all the time, and it annoys the crap out of my wife. She'll be like on her computer or something, and I'll have an NBA game on, and I'll say, like, I say this probably once a night, like, do you know how hard it is what they just did?
Yeah.
Like just as a pickup basketball player, you know, as a good basketball player in my town of 5,000 people growing up, like, I know more. Like, when Mahomes does something amazing, I'm like, wow, that's amazing. But, like, I never played football, so it's harder to, it's harder to translate. I played basketball. And watching what some of these people do and the athleticism and the kind of routineness which with they are making shots, the shot making, I mean, I always come back to is, and he's not the biggest star in the league, and he's not even the best scorer in the league, but is Kyrie Irving. Like, his ability for someone of his size to score and to finish around the rim, I've never seen that before. And again, I know everything that goes with Kyrie, and, you know, he's probably his own worst enemy, and, you know, all those things. But that level of skill, whether it's dribbling or finishing, for a guy who, you know, let's give him a charitable 6'2", I have never seen that before. I just feel like there are just so many good people, right? It's like a debate over the 10 best NBA players right now. There are 25 guys that are that do things on a regular basis that are what I would call, as a very amateur basketball player, astounding.
No.
And I've not, as a fan of the NBA for a very long time, and look, I know, look, that doesn't mean that Larry Bird wasn't great and that Magic Johnson wasn't great. And I think Magic Johnson would be fine in this league, and I think Bird probably would too, because shooting translates. But the number, I'm all about, like, is the best player of, is whoever we think the best player today, is that person better than Michael Jordan? Probably not. Are the next 25 people from 1985 that we could name worse than the next 25 people we could name today? Absolutely.
Yeah, that's an interesting way to look at it. And the skill thing, we talked about this the other day on the show because of Kyrie Irving's left-handed hook shot over Jokic at the buzzer last week. And I said to Tommy, I go, look, I'm not a Kyrie Irving guy. I can't stand him. I think he sabotages everything that he gets himself involved in. But to ignore the fact that he is among the top five most skilled players of all time, you just aren't watching closely enough. I don't know.
Correct.
About Steph Curry, I don't think I've ever seen a better ball handler and shooter in one body than Steph Curry. But the ball handling, shooting, and then shot making in one body for his size, it's probably Kyrie. And Tommy said, well, what about Iverson? Iverson's a good comp. You know, Isaiah, you know, if teams shot the three back in Isaiah's day like they do now, I think Isaiah we'd look at in a different way because he had that kind of range. But yeah, Kyrie is spectacular. Kevin Durant's skill level for his size is outrageous. It's outrageous.
Right, he's 7 feet tall.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I would always urge people that if you are skeptical about the modern NBA, just go, and it's not cheap, and I'm not saying you should go a lot, but just go to a game and try to get decent seats and watch how big these people, it doesn't translate on TV, how big these people are and how skilled they are, right? I mean, it would be amazing of them doing things, the things they do at 6'1", but at 7'1", I mean, again, like you talk ad nauseum about this, but and who knows if his health will hold. But the skill set that a Wembanyama possesses, we've never seen before. Not in someone that height. We just haven't, you know? And maybe in 25 years we'll be saying, man, the NBA is so much better now than it was. But I don't, to me, and I've spent a lot of time thinking about this and looking at it, there are absolutely guys from the 1980s who would prosper in this environment and might even do better just because of the openness of the game. But the average NBA player today is clearly better than the average NBA player of 1985.
Yeah, and look, you could say the same thing about 1985 and 1955. Clearly,
yep.
And it's evolution, it's diet, it's training, it's all of those things. But I think you nailed it. And it is today the shot making. It's the dimensions of the floor that have changed because it's not just a 3-point shot. It's a 3-point shot that has to be guarded out to 35 feet.
Exactly
and,
right.
And that changes and creates a much different open floor. The hand checking rule that barred in 2006, 2007, whatever year that was, that created a more free flowing game. And we got away from, you know, Nets Spurs 78-76, you know, in the NBA Finals or Pistons Spurs. It's the shot making. These guys, they're impossible to stay in front of defensively. And then, you know, if you try to, if you back off, they'll knock it down from 30 feet consistently. So
it's also just the one thing I'd add, it's a more fun game. I grew up in the kind of like bad boy. In 1990, I was 14. And like the Bill Laimbeer, Rick Mahorn, Isaiah, Mark Aguirre, Dennis Rodman, like, that was not fun basketball to watch. It just wasn't. This is fun basketball to watch.
I had fun watching that basketball. The intensity of those games, and we didn't know any better.
Yes, they were intense.
Yeah. So what's the college basketball thing you've already addressed, and I read through your thing quickly, and I was going to talk to you about college basketball, but I think we've covered that. So what is a good replay top five that you and I can do together right now?
Well, why don't we do, let's see if we could do, should we do, well, let's do NFL, because like you said, people care about it the most. What, can we do a biggest number one pick bust in the NFL draft?
Okay.
Can we do that?
Jamarcus Russell, is he one? Are you saying number one, like number one overall?
I think one. Should we do that?
Sure.
Are there enough? My question is there enough?
I don't know.
The name that
they're probably more in the NBA.
Jamarcus Russell. Right. So in the why don't we do the NBA? Because I think the NBA is easier. We'll do the NBA. So one, I would say one in the NBA has to be Anthony Bennett.
Greg Oden was number one overall, wasn't he?
He was, yes, because Durant was two.
Kwame's got to be number one, right?
He played in the NBA. Kwame Brown had a better NBA career than Anthony Bennett.
He's great on social
media. And I'm not saying Kwame Brown had a good NBA career.
Yeah.
Okay. He had a bad NBA career.
Right. Anthony Bennett, by the way, I liked him coming out. I actually thought he was going
to
be good.
Was he at Nevada? Is that where he went to college?
He went to, it was UNLV, right?
UNLV, I think that's right.
I think it was UNLV. But that's the draft which year was Kawhi Leonard? 12? Is Kawhi
I don't
Leonard...
remember. He was like the 8th or 9th pick, right?
No, Kawhi was later than that. He was the 12th or 13th pick.
Oh, my gosh.
He might have been... Hold on, I'm pulling
well,
it up right
the
now.
The other one to throw in there that's worth a conversation is, wasn't local boy makes good Markelle Fultz 1-1 overall?
Yeah, he was 1-1 overall. Kawhi Leonard was 15 in 2011.
15.
All right, that was the Jan Vesely draft, and I was screaming at Ernie to draft Kawhi Leonard. But whatever. Yes. Did we just hit on four or five of them already?
Yes.
Who are we forgetting?
NBA is a little... I don't know. Who are we forgetting? The big one always...
Oden popped right into my mind just because.
Mine always is.
Yeah,
yes.
He barely.
Well, the
he just couldn't. The injuries.
Yes.
Kwame's a good one.
Can I make a quick plug for Greg Oden? So in 2006, Georgetown made the Final Four. It was in Atlanta at the Georgia Dome.
Right.
I went.
Played
because
Florida.
I figured we wouldn't make it again. I wouldn't make it again in a long time. And I was right about that. And Oden was on that Ohio State team. It was Mike Conley was the point guard, and Oden was the center.
Right.
And Georgetown played Ohio State in the national semifinals. And we had Roy Hibbert then as our big guy, who was 7'2 or something. But not. And I will say, Oden in that game was absolutely outstanding. He was a big, athletic, burly guy. Like, I could see the potential there. Like, I think a lot of people, when they think of him, was like, oh, he always looked like he was 70 years old, and he was never good. He was good. Like, there was a moment, I remember watching him in person, he was amazing.
He had skill. Yeah. Noah was on that team, was on that Florida team.
Yes. That was Horford. No, they won back-to-back national championships that year. That was Horford and Noah, yes. That was Billy Donovan.
That was Billy Donovan.
And you know the other team in the Final Four that year was UCLA, and I remember
they went
sitting
to the
in
final.
The stands and UCLA came out, their cheerleaders came out, then the Ohio State cheerleaders came out, and then the Florida cheerleaders came out, and then the Georgetown cheerleaders came out. I'll just say there was a significant difference.
Yeah,
just leave it at that.
I can imagine.
The one thing I did want to do in starting this newsletter is sound like the old crank being like, things were always better back in the day. And I don't believe that. But I do think, like, if you look at college basketball in particular, it is radically different than it was even 15 years ago. I mean, it just is. With talent level, it's hard to, I mean, you're a Maryland guy, I'm a Georgetown guy. I find it hard to even follow sometimes who's on the team because I know this year all five of Georgetown's starters were transfers. And my guess is a bunch next year will be transferred. I mean, it's just hard to sort of keep up. And I'm an ardent, diehard fan.
Yeah. We could do this for another hour, but we can't today.
I don't take too much of your time.
But we can do it at another time, because when you come out with a really good list, I'd love to have you on again to talk about it. But I have to get you to weigh in on the single biggest question in our town, which is, who should they take at number two?
Okay, so I'm assuming that Caleb Williams is off the board.
Let's
assume that.
You think
that's a safe assumption, right?
Yes.
Okay. So I think in terms of size, arm strength, and accuracy, which I think accuracy is underrated, right? Maybe it's properly rated now, but underrated for a long time. I think they should take Drake May.
Okay.
I think he is the safest bet. I think Jaden Daniels probably has a higher upside. Like, the best Jaden Daniels is probably better than the best Drake May, but I think Drake May has the potential to be, I think Drake May is safer, and maybe you don't go safe. I get it. It's a number two pick. Maybe you swing, you know, you try to hit a grand slam rather than a single up the middle, but I think Drake May is a little safer. What do you think?
I'm all in on Jaden Daniels, but I'm also all in on trusting the people that actually do this for a living, but also have so much more information with respect to the people that they're drafting. Like, I think right now I am all in on benefit of the doubt. They have all the information, and I don't see so much of a difference between any of these guys and watching them, but for me, Jaden Daniels was as spectacular a college football quarterback as I've seen in a long time.
I couldn't agree more. I mean, I think, and I would say even maybe include put Caleb Williams in there, the running and passing combo, I know this is terrible, but I do think of the, like, kind of spindly build, and I think of Robert Griffin III. Is that bad? I mean, I just think of, like, and Robert Griffin III was absolutely brilliant for the time he was brilliant, right? Before injury. I just wonder about that with, like, Jaden Daniels. The one thing that I have seen repeatedly is that dude takes huge hits. Now, maybe he just is able to kind of withstand it. You know, I mean, like, there are other people who can do that. Russell Wilson did take some hits and kind of learned over time how to take fewer. But, man, I just worry about that because those guys are, like, the NFL guys are so big and so strong and so fast that I just worry about sustainability and availability.
Yeah, I'm with you. That's the one concern I have is his frame and whether or not it can hold up. Yep. Not so much in the open field, but you know, even in the pocket. I think the big difference between – well, there are two big differences between Daniels and Griffin. Griffin was a true straight-line track athlete. He didn't have the peripheral vision. Jaden Daniels may not be Michael Vick or Russell Wilson, but he's got great vision and great feel. You know, you could tell – you can tell he's a basketball player too, you know, and Griffin wasn't that way. So Griffin was always going to take not only big shots but awkward shots because he didn't see him coming. And then, of course, Griffin entered an organization with Dan Snyder owning it, and you know, the quarterback, the quarterback coming into this one won't, and that's a big difference. Because can you imagine the number two quarterback coming in to an organization still owned by Dan? I mean, the first thing he'd have to fend off is Dan wanting to be his best friend, you know, with a 40-year difference in age.
And it is amazing. It is amazing. But, like, who knows about this current crew? But at a minimum, they seem like they're going to be competent. At a minimum, right? That's the and that is a significant improvement from where we've been.
No doubt.
Which is a remarkable thing to say about a pro football franchise, a massive money-making franchise that Dan Snyder got rich off. I mean, he was already rich, but it got even richer off of, despite the obvious mismanagement.
Nobody can mess up the NFL. Great job. I really enjoyed this. Let's do it again soon.
I would love to. Thank you for having me. Always good. Maybe we will see each other in person.
That sounds like a great idea. Let's do that soon. Chris Saliza, everybody. Everything that he's working on, you can get access to by just following him on Twitter, on X, at Chris Saliza, CILLIZZA. Thanks to Chris. Thanks to Goldie. Have a great weekend. Happy Easter. I'll be back on Monday.
With the first pick in the 2013 NBA draft, the Cleveland Cavaliers select Anthony Bennett of Toronto, Canada, and the University of Nevada, Las Vegas.